This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. It is now easier and cheaper than ever before to start your own blog or website. For just $6.95 per month, you get unlimited hosting, one-click installation of WordPress, a .com domain name, and so much more. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. The show is also brought to you by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
For some reason, the birds in the jingle that we play at the beginning of the show are much more appropriate now that it's finally springtime. I don't know about the weather in California, where my co-host Dave Kale is actually living. Do you have springtime there?
Yes, we do. It's like a strange mashup of winter and summer. There's days where it's hot, and then next thing you know, it's gloomy like it is today and threatening to rain. So,
well, we have beautiful springtime weather here in Holland, and it almost when I'm outside running and I get out of the city itself, it feels like the Shire. I'm in the countryside, and you've got the flowers and the grass, and it just, you know, I can imagine being a hobbit for just half an hour or an hour, depending on how long my run is. But anyway, enough about California or Amersfoort, the Netherlands. That's not why we are here. We want to go to Middle Earth to talk about The Hobbit and to discuss the latest news from New Zealand and the production by Peter Jackson.
Get down. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So what have we heard this past week from the set of The Hobbit? Any big news?
Well, nothing official. It's actually a fairly slow week, kind of, in terms of news. But there have been some fun updates with the controversy over the Hobbit Pub, and a few unofficial things. In particular, some photos that were released anonymously on a German Tolkien website.
Spy photos.
Yes,
that's even better than official news. I love spy photos. So, what do they show?
Ostensibly, the speculation is that they show the town of Dale. They certainly appear to be – they show a set of a town being constructed, complete with like buildings and walls and roofs and stuff. There aren't any other towns in the story of The Hobbit that we're aware of, unless Peter Jackson and company are making up and adding towns to it. So seems very likely that it probably is Dale.
But – wasn't Dale destroyed?
Or rather, maybe Lake Town.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Could either be Lake Town or Dale or some city that they've added and that we don't know about. But yeah, Dale or Lake Town seems to make the most sense. Now, I'm looking at these pictures here. There was a link in the show notes. From what I can tell, and these are all plywood sets, and you can really see that it's all fake. Of course, in the movie, it will look fantastic. But this is a pretty sizable set. Most of these buildings or set pieces kind of simulate stone buildings, very medieval looking, as far as I can tell, almost like a castle. Which makes it less likely to be Lake Town, because wasn't Lake Town built mostly with wood?
Yeah, and it's kind of more shanties and stuff. So that's why I think the folks on this site are speculating that this is maybe like it's Dale, but it's the abandoned Dale, because nobody's there anymore after Smaug ran them out. So.
Yeah, I always imagined Dale to be like a smoking bunch of ruins and then just everything destroyed. from these photos, mm-hmm. I don't get that impression. It's almost as if the buildings are still looking fine. I mean, there's no. Of course, this might still be under construction, so they might dirty up the set later on. But it actually looks like a very normal medieval town.
Yeah, that's a. I don't recall. Maybe I've forgotten since the last time I read The Hobbit, which actually wasn't that long ago. Maybe my brain's just befuddled from the early morning fog. But
lack of coffee.
Yes, I don't recall Tolkien describing Dale very much, and so I think they have a lot of room for license here for deciding what's the look of the town going to be, what's the architectural style. And also, to what degree was it destroyed? I mean, maybe Dale consisted largely of really, really sturdy plywood houses that didn't burn when the dragon attacked.
Who knows?
Yes, but it looks it's made to look like it's stone. And you know, some of the stone, and of course, it's not actually stone, as you mentioned, it's plywood. But it's made to look like stone that looks kind of crumbled and mm-hmm. in some places scorched. So
Okay, I didn't notice that on the photos that I've been looking.
I'm looking at this first photo and looking past the giant storage box, mm-hmm. metal storage box.
Yeah, there are all sorts of containers, sea containers.
Yeah, so I'm looking at one of the units, if, for lack of a better term.
That white house with the red roof?
Yeah, I'm looking at past the red roof one that's kind of the one that's closest to the foreground. I'm mm-hmm. looking past that to one of the ones with that doesn't have a roof, that's sort of a second level unit. And it's got like there's like darkened patches that mm-hmm. could be shadow, but could also maybe be made to look like dragon fire scorches.
Interesting. I don't think that this could be Lake Town. It just doesn't feel like Lake Town. Plus, we know, at least from the glimpses that we saw in the beginning of production video 6, that at least the building that Peter Jackson is in front of is a wooden building that is much more akin to this kind of architecture that we saw in Rohan. Yep. And this looks more, well, it vaguely reminiscent of Helm's Deep. It's just a big kind of castle, medieval city, as I said. But yeah, those marks could be scorches. It's hard
to
tell.
If you go down to the third photo, there's actually a much larger zoomed in image of the same unit I was looking at, and it there's definitely discolored gray patches of quote unquote stone. So maybe.
Who knows? It's certainly not elven architecture. No, uh-uh. So this couldn't be anywhere in Mirkwood. One other thing that it could be, but then it looks almost too new for that, is Dol Guldur, some part of Dol Guldur that we haven't seen, because it looks like a fortress.
Yes. But usually everything that we've seen of Dol Guldur and everything we saw of like the evil people's architecture and mm-hmm. habitations from the previous films are always kind of dark and evil looking. I think this looks too, unless they were trying to make Dol Guldur into kind of a unless they were trying to do Sauron masquerading as like kind of a good guy. This just isn't.
You're right.
Doesn't strike me as the kind of architectural style they would choose for Dol Guldur.
Yeah.
I think Dale's probably the best guess because Dale was like a fortress and a kingdom back before they got thrown out by Smaug.
Well, could it be that we will somehow see the destruction of Dale? And that this is a set where I don't know. This could this be part of a flashback?
Yes.
And
maybe they're gonna burn it down.
I mean, how cool would it be to actually see Smaug in the first movie? Because his big role will be in the second mm-hmm. movie. But if we can see him in action somehow in a flashback in the first part,
yeah, it seems highly likely we'll see. It's hard to imagine getting into the first film and them wanting to tell this story about the dragon destroying everything and motivate this quest for going and defeating the dragon. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine them telling this story on film in visual medium without showing us something of that destruction.
Right.
I think I agree with the people who say, oh, I don't think they'll actually show us Smaug in the first film. They don't want to spoil it, but
his shadow or something. They can of course kind of almost show him, which would make him much more menacing.
That's what I think. I think we'll see dwarves running from the mountain, people running from Dale, fire raining down from the sky, things getting smashed. It could be somebody in reading a lot of the comments that people have posted in response to the Riddles in the Dark podcast that I've been doing with Corey Olson. A lot of people are speculating that that maybe during the Dwarven song that. A really good place for doing some of these flashbacks would be during the Dwarven song, because in the book they describe the effect of the song, or the narrator describes the effect of song on Bilbo, that it's not just he listens to the song and thinks, oh, that's a nice song, but he actually gets kind of carried away and gets sort of that that effect that we see so frequently in Tolkien, where music has power or magic to sort of transform your perception and show you things that you have never seen before. And so maybe they'll start doing the song, and when they start getting to the part about dragon fire and things being on a flame and all that, that we'll get transported back to a flashback of Smaug's attack.
That would be a really cool way to show us a flashback, instead of just having someone telling this story or even doing a voiceover like they did for The Lord of the Rings. Have this be as images accompanied by this dwarven song. I can totally see it. And then the impact later on, because when I was analyzing the production video with Inge a couple of episodes ago, we kind of deducted from what we saw that there's this one place where they go where it's very barren, and it's this ski place. Normally during the winter, that's where the Kiwis go to ski, and it looks like almost like a moon landscape. And there is a certain, you see a valley, and we were like, what could this be? And just by comparing what we saw with the descriptions of different landscapes in The Hobbit, we were like, well, this could be the area of Dale. And then that valley that is now empty could have the remains of Dale that would be easily patched in via CGI. And now I'm thinking the impact of seeing the destruction of Dale in part two of the movie. And the reason that I think that was filmed for the second movie was that Bilbo is wearing totally different clothes. He's got this blue jacket instead of his regular red attire, and he looks much more rugged and seasoned. So we were like, well, this could be the moment that he actually sees Dale, and the emotional impact of seeing a town that is destroyed like that would be so much bigger if we've seen the city intact before its destruction, and perhaps even while it was getting destroyed by Smaug.
Yeah, completely. That's a great. Great speculation, great deduction on the clothes, because what we do know is that the dwarves go straight from the Elven King's dungeon to the town, to the lake town via Beryl in the river.
Yeah.
And when they arrive, Thorin announces himself as King Under the Mountain, and the people are all so excited that they, basically treat the dwarves like honored guests. So they get new clothes and get taken care of. So Bilbo will certainly get maybe some kind of new wardrobe update at that point. And they don't get to look at Dale, the sort of ruination of the dragon, the desolation of the dragon, I believe is the term they use in the book, the desolation of Smaug. They don't see that until after they visited Lake Town, and then they begin their trek to the mountain. And they see it on the way, and it's just, as you describe, it's just a wasteland. It's different from Mordor, but it's still got that same kind of aesthetic of it's all dead.
If you go back to that production video and just look at that, and there's an interview Martin Freeman. It shows the area, and you're just like, this could fit. I don't see any other scene that would fit this kind of landscape other than, it looks barren. And it makes sense because this is kind of for skiing, and so you don't want trees or anything. Yes. And, of course, Smaug has burned all
that
down.
The hard way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You tried to see who was stronger, the tree or you?
Yeah, the tree won.
Oh, boy. Anyway, with fascinating photos here, and when I see sets like this built with plywood, I always feel very kind of like so sad that it's just plywood. You know, you'd want these sets to be around forever so that we can go and visit.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be visiting there. I also hope it doesn't rain too much.
Yeah, although it should withstand rain, I guess. It's just, perhaps they can just cover it. And I'm also surprised to see how much they use sea containers for the overall construction of the set. As a kind of a, almost like a big wall of containers is kind of the, they can lean the set against it. And I guess it's just easy to transport, and they're pretty large. So it's probably much cheaper than building up scaffolding, because that requires much more construction. Fascinating stuff. I hope we'll see more. Isn't
it an interesting notion, them transporting the town of Dale around in these boxes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. Of course, the containers will probably contain the set itself. Say they do double duty. They can use it to transport all the elements of the set, and then they can use that also as building blocks, almost like Lego blocks, big Lego blocks for the set construction.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Do we know who made these photos or where these were taken?
Yes. Let me pull up the site, which I had to run through Google Translate because I don't speak German. says, these photos are from an anonymous source in mid-February, were shot to show the structure of the valley, probably before the devastating, before the devastating attack by the dragon Smaug, as you speculated.
Wow.
The terrain at the top of the Miramar Peninsula actually belongs to the New Zealand Ministry of Defense, but since for many years, no longer used for military purposes. Strange grammatical construction, Google Translate. The location is ideal for Peter Jackson and his crew because it is surrounded by greenery, yet only 5 minutes drive from Weta Workshop and Stone Street Studios.
Oh, so there are even trees around this. Actually, you can see some of the trees near the houses. That would, again, make this a perfect location for Dale before the destruction, because you would see the trees, and then later on in movie 2, we'll see just this barren landscape, and we'll notice that there are no more trees anymore because it's all been burnt down by the dragon. Cool.
Right. And check this out. According to the Wellington City Council, about 60 shipping containers were taken as support for the approximately 9-meter scenes on the site later this month to begin the 8-week shoot. After application to the city at this time, about 600 film professionals are working every day from about, 4 a.m. to like 10 p.m. in the morning, something. I think the time translation here got befuddled, but it sounds like they're working 16-hour days. And there's like hundreds of vehicles going up and down the road. So
I wonder if we will see any, main characters, or whether these will be just sets for like scenes with a massive amount of extras running around in panic, or
Good question. I wonder, they're going to build this set up, get a bunch of extras, and then burn it down.
Yeah, that's probably, I think that's all they can do. I don't see how they can tie this into the storyline of any of the main characters that we know. Although you never know.
Yep. Oh, that's true. Who knows? They might alter or tweak it a little.
Fascinating stuff. I love this spy material.
Me too.
Unfortunately, we have to move on and go to a smaller scale story, even though this got international coverage. And I cannot count the number of tweets I've seen about our Hobbit pub that we talked about last week, and that was in danger of getting closed because of the name, the Hobbit pub. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that some very powerful wizard stepped in and saved the day.
Yes, a very powerful wizard and the master of Lake Town.
Yes.
I think we mentioned the tweet from Stephen Fry last Thursday, because some of this news is from literally from last Thursday, right around the same time, or like even before. I think I actually missed this Ian McKellen blog entry, because I think it's actually from before last Thursday. But Stephen Fry and Ian McKellen are both natives of the UK. I think fans of the sort of pub wine bar culture there. And so I don't think they were terribly amused by the Salzens Corporation's treatment of the owners of this Hobbit pub. And so they, for one thing, they sort of sparked off the internet rage about it and really brought a lot of attention to it. Stephen Fry called it bullying. And then Ian McKellen posted this short little blog post in which he just basically talks about the absurdity of doing this, that the Tolkien, you know, Tolkien stuff like hobbits and other kinds of stuff are just really part of popular culture and the popular conscious mind at this point. And so it's a little ridiculous to go around trying to trademark all these things or prevent other people from using this imagery. And it may even be self-defeating, you know, like in a way, you know, the fact that these things have penetrated our popular conscious mind means it creates additional business opportunities for people who really do want to profit. So
this attitude towards this particular pub reminds me a lot of these early reactions that you saw, you know, like 5-6 years ago on the internet when all these fan sites started to pop up, and some movie companies tried to shut them all down, and they didn't want any pictures to leak out, and it was such a knee-jerk reaction, and it was counterproductive because it created a lot of negative buzz around the franchise. And and I think one of the things that they learned eventually after a while was that the more buzz you get about your brand, the better it will be for your franchise and for your, you know, anything you want to sell. I remember that when this science fiction movie, it was a Sony production, Starship Troopers was still in preparation, or they were filming it. I remember Harry Knowles from Ain't It Cool News. He posted spy pictures and leaked concept drawings of the aliens or the whatever the monsters that were attacking this base. And Sony just went in overdrive to shut down Ain't It Cool News and started this war against Harry Knowles. And it was so stupid because it created so much negative fan reaction all over the world. People were outraged. And then ultimately, they started to work with Ain't It Cool News. And actually, I think it helped them make some money off that otherwise not really perfect movie. And so I just don't understand. They should know by now that stuff like this, you should just leave that alone and let people be happy eating their Hobbit sandwich. And, you know. Oh, well. I think the pub owner ultimately is the one who will benefit from this whole brouhaha. This has turned into another place of pilgrimage. If I go to the UK and I go anywhere near this pub, I need to visit.
Yeah, I completely agree. Who wouldn't go at this point? So there has been a bit of a resolution to it all. Mm-hmm. I think Middle Earth Enterprises really felt the pressure from the internet casting judgment on them, and they just saw, like, this is just they don't have the best reputation to begin with, and this was just making it even worse. So they're trying to save face a bit. They don't want to completely give up their claim to the trademark, but they also don't want to force this pub to go under. So what they came out and said was, we don't want to hurt your ability to do business or keep you from make you change or take your name down or anything. We just, you know, we'll settle for a nominal licensing fee. So it's £63 or $100 roughly, annual fee to, license the name Hobbit for use for their pub.
Really?
So
petty.
Yeah, it's very, very petty. And then Ian McKellen and Stephen Fry stepped up and said, "We'll pay it for the pub."
Of course.
So it's interesting. It is very petty, but I think I can imagine an argument being made that a door could be opened if they didn't do this. If they just said, "Go right ahead, use it," that you know, it's only a matter of time before counterfeit Hobbit stuff pops up on the internet, and that when they try to take action against those people, that maybe their argument might be undermined by the fact that they were so permissive. But I don't know if that's actually true. I would need to see what a lawyer would say. And actually, so the Middle Earth Network did a special radio show, and it's now a podcast that you can find on iTunes, last week, where they had a bunch of legal experts on and some interviews with some folks who were close to this case, discussing it. So if you are really interested in the sort of legal ins and outs of this, that actually would be a really good listen, I think.
Very cool. It's good to see that fans are stepping up and that we think about the consequences of all this legal mumbo jumbo. Before you know it, you can't even mention The Hobbit or The Shire anymore without getting a takedown notice if we're not careful.
Yes. Well, this is certainly attracted additional scrutiny and attention to the Saul Lins Corporation and Middle Earth Enterprises that they may not have anticipated. One thing people have started doing is digging through trademark applications that they have filed. Mm-hmm. And what people have noticed is a whole bunch of extra ones that they filed like in the last 6 months. And in particular, they filed one for the Shire, I think just 3 months ago, to trademark the word Shire.
Boy,
really ridiculous. And so now there is a huge internet campaign, which was kicked off by the Middle Earth Network, by my friends there, called Save the Shire. It's got the Twitter hashtag Save the Shire. They opened a Twitter account. They've got a site, savetheshire.mymiddle-earth.net. And basically, they're trying to I'm not quite sure what their objective is. I do think that they're actually filing a dispute of the trademark. Like, I think the current sort of the status of the application from Middle Earth Enterprises, it's in sort of open for dispute time or something, which basically means there's this window of time where other people can dispute your trademark. So I think Middle Earth Network and some other folks are filing disputes of the term Shire, trademarking the term Shire. So I think that's one of the things they're trying to do. But also they're just trying to drum up awareness for people to know that these kinds of things are going on. It's one thing to be sort of overly aggressive about enforcing your trademark of something like The Hobbit. It's another thing to try and trademark a word like Shire not in any way, shape, or form native to Middle Earth.
It's like those patent wars where everybody seems to sue everybody. You can't do anything creatively anymore because everything has these legal consequences, and I think it stifles creativity. It could kill the whole fan world around a franchise like The Hobbit, but other franchises as well.
Usually we see this really bad behavior in like the tech world where people use this as a business strategy. We can't build anything new or innovate, but
it's
what we'll
spreading.
Do is sue other people and try to make some
spreading.
Money.
I bet you it's Sauron who is behind all this.
Yes, this is definitely very Sauron-like behavior.
Yes. Well, fortunately, we've got the good wizard fighting the good fight to protect us from all this.
Yes, that's right. The gray/white wizard is leading us.
All right.
He's fighting the good fight.
That's good to know.
And Stephen Fry as well. And the good wizard and the good comic.
Let's take a short break.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town. See the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
Let's take a short break to thank all our listeners for their continued support. We hardly ever do that, but you've been downloading this show, you've been listening for a long time, and we get so much great feedback and encouragement via Twitter, via our Facebook page, via email. It's a great joy to make programs for all of you. And we want to encourage you to continue your support by leaving us some feedback. If you have some time, just go over to iTunes, leave us a review. That helps a lot of new listeners to find us, because otherwise, we don't have any budget to go out and put posters up or post all sorts of fancy trailers for this podcast. So we rely on you to spread the word about this podcast. And particularly, I want to thank all of you that doing it, just adding your contribution to our show. You can do that by sending us feedback. And in the past, that was kind of tricky to do that. You either had to send us a MP3 file via email, or there was a listener feedback number that you could call. But we've made it much more simple to leave feedback on the show. You can just go to the main website of the StarQuest Production Network, which you can find at sqpn.com. And on the right-hand side of the screen of that website, you will see a tab on most computers. I'm not sure if this works on tablet computers, but on a regular PC or Mac, it will show you a tab, and you can click on it. It says Send Voicemail. And if your computer is able to record audio, and most modern computers are nowadays, you have built-in, you know, microphones or a webcam, it will automatically find that, and it will allow you to leave voicemail. You don't have to, you know, figure out how to send it to us. Just click that tab and leave some voice feedback. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your voice. And if you have a question for us, or you know more about what, for instance, those set pieces could represent. If you have a theory about that, don't hesitate to let us know. And then if you record some voice feedback, we can play it on the show. So I highly recommend you just go over to sqpn.com, click on that voicemail tab, and leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear from all our minions all over the world.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
So let's go back to the news from New Zealand and from Wellington. Stephen Fry was in Wellington again? He's been lining up for a new iPad, I heard.
Yes, he was. Apparently he is such a... I remember there was an article a while ago about him complaining about the broadband speed he was getting.
Yes.
And I guess he's just a technophile and an internet addict, so... He needed.
Well, judging from the number of tweets that he sends out, so many tweets every day, yes. He's got to be totally, glued to his smartphone or iPad. But I was surprised to hear that he was actually in Wellington. Is he doing additional work for The Hobbit, or is this something else? Do you know that?
I haven't heard anything explaining this. I imagine he's there. Since most of his stuff is in the second film,
yes.
He probably has a lot of, and the Master of Lake Town appears throughout the second film. He's
mm-hmm.
actually a pretty, I don't know if I'd say important character, because he doesn't drive a lot of the main action, but he does have important roles in certain circumstances, and he is sort of important for demonstrating some of the morals and stuff. So I imagine he's got a lot of filming to do.
I think you're right. This must be for the second movie, and mm-hmm. well, we know that the whole Lake Town set is up and finished in Wellington. And so it makes sense that he actually is in Wellington. I guess that most of his work will be in the studio, though. So it's going to be inside.
I think you're right.
It's not going to be on location anywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. But he strikes me as the kind of guy that while he's there in New Zealand, if he has like a few days off and he's not filming anything, he seems like the guy that would be running around, visiting things, doing
absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
Plus, he's in this article, they have a quote from him where he says that there's a long line and he's thankful that he already has his iPad 3 and he's there to get one for a friend. So maybe he was just generously donating his time to his friend to wait in line for.
He really seems to enjoy traveling and just being involved in so many different projects. I was about to say something and now I forgot. My brain just froze there for a second. The thing that surprises me is that he can take so much time off because he's such a well-known television personality in the UK. I thought that he would have his, his daily, weekly show. Apparently, he has time to do all these extra projects. I don't know. We don't have the BBC. I don't have BBC on my television here in the Netherlands. Actually, I don't even have. Well, I have a television, but I don't have any cable or anything because I watch everything on the internet. But perhaps some of our UK listeners can chime in and tell us a little bit more about what other things Stephen Fry is involved with on the BBC. But perhaps he's just doing kind of non-time-sensitive work. And I know that he's been involved in voiceover work. He does documentaries. He's got these, you know, TV series where he goes to visit other people and do interviews, like the one that he did with Peter Jackson. Didn't he also do lots of interviews around the production of the Harry Potter movies? Because I was listening to a podcast that does a very interesting analysis of all of the different Hobbit movies, the Harry Potter movies. And I might as well give that podcast series a plug, because I know that a lot of our listeners will enjoy it. It is called Digital Gonzo. Just go to iTunes or just look in Google for Digital Gonzo Harry Potter podcasts. And they did a seven-part series. It's one of the best analyses I've ever heard of the Harry Potter movies. And they also play clips, especially in the second part of their recordings. I think it's Stephen Fry interviewing J.K. Rowling about. And those are, I don't know where they are from, if this is extra material on the DVDs or whether this was aired on television. Mm-hmm. But isn't Stephen Fry, doesn't he do the UK version of the audiobooks of Harry Potter?
That is absolutely correct.
All right. So that is probably also why he does so much around Harry Potter. Anyway, I don't know.
Yes, and this interview, Stephen Fry by J.K. Rowling, I remember hearing about this. This is from like quite a while ago, I believe. There's like a full transcript of it on, it was at Royal Albert Hall. Maybe there's more than one interview, but I did find one. I found an interview at Royal Albert Hall, and there's a full transcript of it at MuggleNet.
You should definitely check that out if you're a Harry Potter fan, because I thought that he is just asking so many good questions. Also about, you know, what motivated her to tell this or that story, or why there are certain elements in the story. And I learned a lot about how much the Harry Potter stories are intertwined with J.K. Rowling's own personal experiences in life. And I was amazed that Stephen Fry went way beyond the kind of polite questions that you would normally ask in a situation like that.
Yes, he is a this is something I remember hearing people talk about this interview, and just people are, he's just a really, really smart, articulate guy, and so he is a fantastic interviewer.
I hope that he will do interviews for The Hobbit as well.
Oh, I'm
I'd
sure
love
he
to
will.
Hear a I, long
I'd
conversation.
Love to hear him do an interview with Peter Jackson and the other writers and
absolutely
Martin Freeman.
Absolutely. Perhaps he will. Perhaps that's all going to be on the super duper Blu-ray special edition that we will all buy in 2018.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that'll be the super duper Hobbit plus Lord of the Rings with an additional 12 hours of material that you didn't even know they'd filmed
with
versions.
Digitally added hobbits and
that's right.
This time, wait for it. You know, Gandalf has green hair.
Yes. Yeah, and they'll have added an extra music video scene.
That would be, if George Lucas had been in charge of these movies, imagine the disaster. We'd have to buy new versions every year. Oh,
yes.
Thank God for Peter Jackson, really.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, according to whatculture.com, one of the biggest films of 2012, of course, is going to be The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. But this is overall a very good year for movies. Mm-hmm. We've got The Hunger Games now. I haven't seen it yet, but it is in theaters right now. We will have The Dark Knight again, The Avengers. There's Prometheus. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Isn't that the Alien prequel?
That's the Alien prequel that's not an Alien prequel.
I saw the trailer for that. It looks fantastic. It does
remind
me a lot of Alien. But so it's a fantastic year for movie lovers. And so they did an article about what would be awesome about The Hobbit and what could suck about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they predict, they give it a star rating, 4 out of 5. I think that's kind of meager. I mean, 4 out of 5, really?
Yeah, they gave Prometheus got 5. I'm looking at some of the other ones. Hunger Games got 4 out of 5. I can't believe they gave, let's see what they gave Twilight. That better not have a 4 out of 5.
5 out of 5. that would disqualify
them. I'd be really offended. They gave Prometheus a 5. Let's see. Twilight, you get a 1 out of 5. Okay.
Okay. That's good.
For Twilight, they gave it 879,652 out of 5 for a Twilight fan. For a sane person, 1 out of 5.
That's funny. And the Avengers gets only 3.5 out of 5. But I think that four out of 5 stars for The Hobbit is underestimating the impact that this movie is going to have. And I'm not just saying this as a Hobbit fan. I think this is such a huge deal. And just with all the buildup that the Lord of the Rings movies just give Peter Jackson, it's an automatic, instant box office hit. And the fact that this is going to be in 3D, it's going to be in, you know, this 48 frames per second presentation, there will be so many ways in which they can get extra revenue. They predict a box office gross of $1.5 billion worldwide.
That's definitely has the largest predicted box office gross.
Yeah.
I'm flipping through. I'm looking at all the films, and there the highest number after that is Twilight. And he's predicting that like 800 million. So,
okay.
So I feel gratified to know that they think Hobbit will make more money than any of the others.
The only thing, the only downside perhaps of this movie is going to be that there might be a part of the audience that thinks that this is just, you know, it's one movie. And so if the movie ends on a cliffhanger and people leave the theater like dissatisfied and it's like, well, where's the next movie? That might perhaps disappoint a few people, but I don't
know. Well, he asks an interesting question too, which I imagine most Tolkien fans like myself would dismiss it, but maybe for the average film goer is a good one. Basically, are people really going to get excited about watching a prequel when they already know, you know, that essentially the real evil threat here, which is Sauron, has already been, you know, we've already watched him get defeated and the Third Age end and the king returns and everything's wonderful. And so is there really any tension or drama in this story? Well, I think what he says is, where does he ask it? He says, what is the point in what we are going to see? If the main thread of the story is whether Bilbo dies or not, I can spare you the suspense. He doesn't. He's in three films whose timelines follow that of The Hobbit.
Yeah, but I think that there are so many parts of the story that make, you know, we've got the dragon as the big evil character in these two movies. So defeating him will be a big deal. Then we have that war of the five armies. That's going to be hopefully a big deal, and will give some epic conclusion to the story as well. We've got the personal journey of Bilbo that most people will not be familiar with, and they might have read The Hobbit when they were young, but it might be a long time ago, you know. And so yep. I think that there is a much more than needed actually to give these two movies their own kind of storyline, and I'm not too worried about that.
I'm not either, because I don't think this is a film where I think even people who haven't read the book, surely they aren't going this to find out what happens to Bilbo.
No, of course not.
I mean, everybody knows this story. I think if there's any tension or sort of drama or suspense at all, it's I wonder how they're going to execute this element or that element. And otherwise, you're going to watch it to enjoy it, to enjoy the special effects, to enjoy the story and the acting, and to, you know, see how it comes to life. I mean, people read these books over and over again.
Of course.
Surely they know what happens by then.
That the strength of the story is undeniable. And I think it might also be one of the big factors in getting audiences back into the theater might just be plain old nostalgia. They've seen this movie a couple of years ago. There was no economic crisis at the time. The world was all right, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that will play an important role as well. You might actually have people that will go watch it with their children that weren't even born at the time of The Lord of the Rings. So you'll get stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have no doubt that this will be... I think this will be five out of five, and it might make more than 1.5 billion worldwide. I have no comparison with other movies, but they wonder, will this beat The Dark Knight Rises? I'm pretty sure it will.
Yeah, I think so too. I think especially it's coming at the end of the year. It's going to be the movie event of the year, maybe of the last 5 years.
Plus, we'll have been...
It's going to be bigger than Harry Potter. That's my prediction.
Absolutely. And we will have been disappointed by so many other movies, you know.
That's right, yeah.
So there's always this hope that this Christmas movie will beat them all, you know. So people will watch it for that reason alone. And from what we know about the movie, it's going to be so absolutely awesome. Yeah, it'll be huge. All right, says the fan.
Yep. Yeah, we're totally unbiased.
Absolutely. Well, let's go and take a look at what's happening in the fan community, since we're already doing the fan speak. And it's been a while since we actually talked about what's going on in the fan world around this production.
Mm-hmm. So I think the big interesting thing coming up is Tolkien Reading Day is approaching.
I remember that we talked about this in the past, like last year. But
yeah.
Have we been doing this podcast for over a year now? Is that...
We have.
Oh my goodness. I'm getting old. It feels like we've just talked about this, Tolkien Reading Day. So what's the date?
Sunday, March 25th, to commemorate the downfall of Sauron.
Wow. Awesome.
Uh-huh.
And so what are you going to do on Tolkien Reading Day?
Oh, man, I hadn't even thought about it, but but I need to do something. I'm certainly going to sit down and read some selection that I maybe haven't read in a long time. Maybe I'll listen to a bit of Robert Inglis's audiobook recording of The Hobbit. I know that Middle Earth Network is doing a bunch of stuff. They're doing a Tolkien Reading Day photo contest. They want you to send in a photo of yourself reading some Tolkien somewhere on that day. And they're doing some special podcasting stuff on the radio station. So if you go to, let's see, I think there's also... Let's see what this URL is. I think, if you go to TolkienReadingDay.com, is that what it was? Yeah, .com. That takes you to the Middle Earth Network's site. I know mm-hmm. the Tolkien Society, they're the ones who I believe started Tolkien Reading Day, are doing a bunch of stuff. So just Google it and you'll find a lot. Sorry, I was lazy. I didn't look it up. So listeners, go Google it and find it out. Hopefully you'll listen to this before. Hopefully you won't listen to this on Monday and be disappointed you missed it.
Yeah. It's also Good Friday. So this is right before Easter.
Yes.
So I got to find a good Tolkien story that contains lots of suffering. And you know, Tolkien was
That's
a good
right.
Catholic. So he would have wanted me to read something that kind of connects Tolkien Reading Day with Good Friday and the story of the Passion of Christ. Is there anything in the Silmarillion that I could read that is some tragic story about a hero sacrificing himself? Or there must be stuff in there.
A couple stories. There's a few sad stories in there, you know, just a couple.
Suggestions for what we should read on Tolkien Reading Day are welcome. Just send us a voice feedback. Again, go to sqpn.com, click on that voice feedback tab. Let us know what you are going to read on Tolkien Reading Day. And then next week, we'll play that on the show. So what's going to be your particular a book or a chapter or story that you will read on Tolkien Reading Day? So mm-hmm. again, sqpn.com, click on the leave a voice feedback message, and that will your computer will do the rest, I hope.
So what else is going on in the community?
I don't know if you talked about this on the episodes that I missed, mm-hmm. or if we've talked about it before. I don't think we have, because I keep leaving the Google Doc and then not getting to it. Have you seen the Lord of the Rings genealogy project?
Yes. I just mentioned it rather briefly in one of those previous episodes.
I thought you probably had, but I wanted to make sure to give it its proper due, because it's pretty awesome. This guy's doing some really good work.
And it's very helpful to kind of, if you're reading anything, I'm doing a lot of background stuff right now for Secrets of Middle Earth, which is our podcast mm-hmm. where we travel through Middle Earth. And then eventually I'll stumble upon certain names of, you know, people that inhabited some part of ruins or some fortress that we come across. And I've always been so, gosh, who is this person again? Because I get really confused not being a true Tolkien expert. I'm like, oh, which era is this? And who is this person related? Is this an elf? Or and just having the Lord of the Rings, you know, genealogy project, and I can just look up that name and see how that person is related and where exactly this is in history of Middle Earth. It's been very, very helpful.
So yeah, it's really good work. He's doing such a great job, and it looks like they've got an Android app now, which is mm-hmm. awesome. Yeah, he just keeps plowing along. He's gotten a lot of good publicity. There's a mention of him on the online Time magazine site and in The Guardian. So very exciting. Very exciting. I'm going to keep a close eye on it. I think he wants to branch out and start doing do a timeline as well.
Nice. Mm-hmm. What I like is that find thing in the upper right corner. So I can just type in any name and it will show me the family tree of that particular character or person. At least I hope it is. It says the family tree is loading. So I just typed in Dwalin just to see a little bit more. But is it doing anything with that or not? Or is it could be just my computer not working.
Let me give it a shot too. Dwalin, find. There we go. Where is it going? Family tree is loading, it's telling me.
Yeah.
And the little circle's spinning.
Well, it just gives me the family tree, the entire tree. So
I'm not sure, you know, the one thing I don't know, I honestly haven't looked terribly close at this thing, but I think he might be focusing on elves right now. Scrolling through this is pretty clearly elves and men thus far.
I think
also that, here's dwarves over here.
Yeah, if you click on in a menu on dwarves or hobbits, it will show you just the tree for the dwarves, for instance.
Okay, so let's see what they've got in here. I mean, this is probably it's tough to do dwarves because at least we don't know hardly any of this.
It's not very big. The biggest line here is from Durin the sixth, Nine the first, yep. Thrain the first, Thorin the first, Gloin, Oin, Nine the second, Dain.
There's Dwalin. Okay, Dwalin and Balin, who of course are the sons of Fundin, who apparently is the son of Farin, the son of Borin, and who is also from the line of the kings.
He's
the son of Nine.
It's kind of, you can do these biblical stories, like in the genealogy tree of Jesus, where it's like, and he was the son of that, it was the daughter of so and so.
Maybe the find functionality isn't quite working.
I don't think it works, but once they get that working, that would really make it the ultimate tool to figure out information, because of course you can type it into Google, but then you'll find many, many different wikis. And an additional problem is now with the game Lord of the Rings Online, you get all these kind of made up names that are not mm-hmm. part of the Tolkien canon of books, but they are still somehow, if you Google names, they still, it's hard to tell what is truly Tolkien and what is, you know, kind of the expanded universe, as they call it.
Yeah, it's the same kinds of problems that the Star Trek and Star Wars people have too, trying to keep the canon straight.
For that alone.
I used to enjoy when I was watching Deep Space Nine, my favorite of the Star Trek series. I would look things up on Memory Alpha, and I found this site, Memory Beta, and I was like, what the heck is that? And I finally figured out that's for all the like sort of extra non-canon material.
Okay, wow. And then you've got parts of the canon that have been acknowledged by Lucasfilm or the official Star Trek company or whatever it is. And then you've got parts that have been overthrown. And now you've got like secondary timelines, and it's getting so confusing. In a way, I'm glad that with Middle Earth, we at least we've got the writings of Tolkien, and no one else can add to that except for Christopher Tolkien. But anyway, what's this whole Rincon thing? Is it a big convention or?
Yes, and I believe it is in Germany.
Oh wow, that's my neighboring country.
I put that little comment. You're gonna go? You should.
Perhaps now I will. Billy Boyd is gonna be there.
Yes.
He plays Pippin, so that's pretty cool. And this is in October. That's a busy month for me, but. Hey, since it's just in Germany, let me see. Is there a website for RingCon?
Yep, ringcon.de, and then you have to pick your language. But they've got Billy Boyd is like the headliner. They got Ian Brody, the New Zealand photographer.
Nice.
The girl who plays Arya Stark in Game of Thrones apparently is going to be there.
Still haven't seen Game of Thrones. It's crazy. Everybody talks about this. This is from the 5th until the 7th of October in Bonn in Germany. I'm getting tickled. Especially because the whole New Zealand adventure, man, I've been looking at the cost of that to go there for the premiere.
Yes.
But I think it's out of my league.
Yeah, me too.
Unless
I'm not gonna be able to
stumble upon a dragon that will give me all its gold. I think it's a little bit too expensive than I can justify. I'm just a poor priest. But then again, you never know. You never know. Anyway, lots of stuff to look forward to this year. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk about the latest news from Middle Earth. Again, if you have any spy photos, let us know. Leave us some voice feedback. You can also just send us an old-fashioned email, tolkien@sqpn.com. Dave, is there anything else that you want to add to the story?
Nah,
we're done. Where can people follow you if they want to follow you on Twitter or on Facebook?
My Twitter account is Dave Kale, DaveKale. So
wonderful.
Yes, you'll get a wide variety of tweets on very different topics.
Well, some people actually enjoy that. They want to get to know us beyond just the Hobbit news. And then other people are just like, oh, goodness, no. As long as they talk about The Hobbit, the banter during the show is worse enough. Just give us a 10-minute condensed version about the news, and that would probably please some of our listeners. But hey,
yes.
Oh well. We're just providing background noise anyway. Well, they call this, I work in regular radio as well, and sometimes if there's too much banter, it's like we're providing wallpaper radio. So basically, you put that somewhere in the background, and then you do other important stuff. Hey, there's one thing I want to mention, and that is if people want to join a live recording of this show, they can go to live.sqpn.com. And if we are recording podcasts, it's always has a live chat room and also a live video stream. So right now there are people in the chat room, and if you want to know when we are going live, make sure you follow me on Twitter, because I usually send out a tweet, so that would be Father Roderick on Twitter, or you just follow the official Secrets of the Hobbit Twitter account, and that is Hobbit Podcast on Twitter. And hope to see you soon in another episode of the Secrets of the Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.